All right, chapter 1. If you've read Ezekiel chapter 1, is it a easy thing to envision, to picture? You have these four living creatures, you have a whirlwind, you have a firmament, you have wheels with eyes in it, and you have somebody on a throne. And so that's what the first chapter is dealing with. But this isn't the first time that we've seen a vision of God. Matter of fact, who was the first one? Anybody remember?
Jacob, right?
Okay, Jacob's ladder, right? He saw the angels going up and down. Who was at the top? God was at the top, all right? Then we jump to Moses. When Moses went up on the mountain with the 70 elders, what did he see? So you see that second verse there on page 1. It says, they saw the God of Israel, and under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone. Now that same color is going to be the throne that is going to be on the top of this. I think it's a chariot, actually, is what I think is being depicted here. Then, of course, we have Isaiah's call. And he sees the Lord sitting on a throne. And where's this throne?
I looked it up.
But where is it? All right, it's inside of the temple. So he sees this throne inside of the temple, and is he happy? Woe is me, for I'm a man of sinful lips. So this is what we're going to be looking at in chapter 1, and I wanted to give that as an introduction, and then I want to spend just a few minutes, because I've always been a little fuzzy on this. Exactly when did Daniel go in? Exactly when did Daniel or Ezekiel start preaching? Exactly when did the fall of Jerusalem occur after that? And so spent some time this morning piecing this all together. It took quite a while, and I'm going to just summarize it very quickly. You notice in the very middle of the page that Ezekiel says, in the 30th year, in the fourth month, and the fifth day of the month, and then in verse 2, on the fifth day of the month, which was in the fifth year of Jehoiachin's captivity. Now, do we remember those kings? Remember we dated Jeremiah? There was Josiah. Then there was Jehoiakim. See, I got the benefit. I spent all day looking at this. There was Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and then Zedekiah. And so he began preaching in the fifth year of Jehoiachin's captivity, and we'll kind of lay that out right now. So if you look toward the bottom of page 1, actually where it says Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 11 years. Then in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar came up to Jerusalem and besieged it. And who did he take at that time? Because it's in Daniel chapter 1. So he takes Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, and he takes a group of people. So in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, that's when that occurred. And then Jehoiakim rested with his fathers, is the next verse in 2 Kings 24:6. And Jehoiachin, now remember, that's the man that we talked about above. He's the one who had been in captivity for 5 years when Ezekiel started preaching. So he's 18 years old when he begins to reign. And how long does he reign? Real long time, right? 3 months, 10 days. Then Nebuchadnezzar came back. Nebuchadnezzar besieged the city. That's in 2 Kings 24:10-12, just above the bottom. And Jehoiachin, king of Judah, his mother, his servants, his princes, his officers went out with the king, went out to the king of Babylon in the 8th year of his reign, took him prisoner. Now this is the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. So he took him prisoner. So we know that Daniel went into captivity in the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. Now it's the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. And at this time, Jeremiah gets that vision we talked about last week. You remember the two baskets of figs? One was good, one was bad. Who were the good figs?
The group that was taken.
All right, the people who are already in Babylon. What are the bad figs?
Those will be destroyed.
The ones that are left in Jerusalem. Nobody who is left in Jerusalem. So we've had two captivities now. We've had the captivity in which Daniel was taken. Then we have a second captivity where Jehoiachin and all of those people are taken. A few months after that is when he sees the two baskets of figs. And just about the same time, let's go ahead and turn to page 2. Just about the same time, Jeremiah writes his letter. He writes his letter to the captives. Well, actually, let's just kind of read through the verse. It says, these are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem to the remainder of the elders who were carried away captive. Priests, prophets, all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captive from Jerusalem. This happened after Jeconiah. Now, Jeconiah is a second name for Jehoiachin. So Jehoiachin is Jeconiah, the queen mother, the eunuchs, the princes of Judah and Jerusalem, the craftsmen and the smiths had departed from Jerusalem. So that's who Nebuchadnezzar took the second time. First time he took Daniel and all the young men who had wisdom. Second time he takes the craftsmen and the remainder of the kings. So Jeremiah writes to them in verse 5, build houses and dwell in them, plant gardens and eat their fruit, take wives and beget sons and daughters. And then at the very bottom, after 70 years are completed at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good work toward you and cause you to return to this place. So now we can start tying these things together. The last thing we need to factor in is that next two verses where it says Zedekiah was 21 years old when he became king. He reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. In the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the fourth month, on the ninth day of the month, the city was penetrated, and of course it was destroyed, and that was the end of the temple, and that was the end of those people. So if we take all of that, we look at the box here, and we can kind of piece together how this all materialized. So we read, first of all, and this is the first line in that box, that Jehoiakim reigned 11 years, and in the fourth year of his reign, Daniel was taken captive. And we know this was in 607 or 606 B.C. So that's when the captivity started. That's when the 70 years started clocking. So 607, 606, that's when Daniel was taken. Now, Jehoiachin took the throne and reigned 3 months and 10 days and was taken in 597 or 596. So that's 10 years. So we have 10 years that Daniel's already in Babylon. Then the prophecy of the good figs is fulfilled that all who are going to Babylon will be God will look down upon them with mercy. So then we read in the fifth, and Jeremiah then wrote his letter just after Jehoiachin was taken captive. Now, 5 years later, God calls Ezekiel. So we're 15 years into the 20-year period that Jerusalem had left after they took Daniel. Then, 6 years after Daniel is called, Jerusalem is destroyed. Now, we're going to read a lot in the first maybe 10 or 15 chapters about Ezekiel and the captives that are still in Jerusalem and the captives that are in Babylon and how they are hoping that Jerusalem is going to be re-inhabited. And all of that occurs in 6 years because it's the first 6 years of Ezekiel's prophesying that Jerusalem is destroyed after those 6 years. So everything that we read about in those first 10 chapters is a 6-year period. Then Jerusalem is destroyed, and 70 years after the initial captivity, they're freed and allowed to go back to Jerusalem in 537 to 536, or 55 years after the call of Ezekiel. So Daniel went in. Was he still alive after the 70 years? Yeah, he was alive. Now, Ezekiel, he's only got 55 years. Daniel had how many years? All 70, right? He had all 70 to wait. Whereas Ezekiel, and we don't know when Ezekiel was taken. He could have been taken the first time with Daniel, or he could have been taken with Jeconiah or Jehoiachin in 596. So he may have been in Babylon for the entire 15 years, or he may have only been there 5 years when this occurred. So that gives us the time frame where Ezekiel is working. He is working with the children of Israel only 15 years into their captivity. So when he says they are a rebellious house, after 15 years, have they repented? No, they haven't repented yet. And they probably won't repent. God says, I don't really care if you reach them or not. I just want them to know that a prophet has been among them. So We come back now to that verse we started with in Ezekiel chapter 1, right in the middle of page 2. So it came to pass in the 30th year in the fourth month on the first day of the month, or the fifth day of the month. Now, nobody knows what that 30 years is. Some people say that's how old Ezekiel was. It was in my 30th year. But does it say in my 30th year? No, it just says in the 30th year. Other people say that this was about the 30th year of the Babylonian Empire, so it was in the 30th year of the Babylonian Empire. But why would we care about that? Why would anybody care about the 30th year? Because it had nothing to do with the 70-year captivity. It had nothing to do with anything. So I really think, although you can't say it with all dogmatism, but this is probably when Ezekiel started preaching. And so 55 years later, how old would he be? He's 30 now. 30 plus 55?
85.
85. Carl, is that pretty young?
Yeah.
85? Yeah, I thought you might say that. Virgil probably say that's not so old. 85? He's still a spring chicken, right? But he could be alive and he could still be working. And again, there's no way to know that. The book ends long before the children of Israel come out of captivity. So we're kind of faced with some questions here. All right, so does anybody have any questions on this? I just wanted to give you the history of when the first captivity went in, the second captivity went in, when Ezekiel started prophesying, and when all the rest of the Jerusalem was destroyed. So that's kind of where we have it fixed now, and Ezekiel is 6 years before the destruction of Jerusalem. So there's still children of Israel in both places. And once again, what are the children of Israel in Babylon counting on? What's that?
The 70 years.
No, they're not counting on 70 years.
They're counting on going home.
They're counting on going home. Yeah. And they don't believe that letter. They don't like that letter. Now, that letter came about 5 years before Ezekiel started preaching. So they've had it for 5 years. So obviously Daniel has heard it and Ezekiel has heard it because it says it went to the priests and the prophets. So that's where we come into this. And so the children of Israel have had plenty of time. And now Ezekiel's going to start preaching, and he's going to tell them, you're not going back. And are they going to believe him? Not till it's destroyed. Once it's destroyed, you remember one time he has to lay on one side, lay on another side, and he has to make an image of the siege of Jerusalem and say it's going on right now. And another time he's going into the temple and seeing all of the idolatry that the Jewish Sanhedrin are actually participating in, and then he goes back to the temple, and God says to six men, put on your battle axe, and go out and kill every man, woman, and child. And then he sends out the guy with the inkhorn. What does the guy with the inkhorn do? He puts a mark on everybody's forehead who sighs and cries over the abominations of Jerusalem, and then those people are spared. So all of this is occurring in the book of Ezekiel during this six-year period before the destruction of Jerusalem. And, of course, poor Jeremiah, he's back in Jerusalem, but what is he working with? Which basket?
Bad figs.
He's got the bad figs that are not ever going anywhere. They're all going to be destroyed. And that's how he ends his life. He ends his life in what country?
Egypt.
And so that's how he comes to his end. All right, so any questions? Okay, and you probably already knew that, but I didn't. So I'm excited about it. I hope maybe you're excited about it too. All right, so we come now to verse 3. The word of the Lord. Boy, this thing's kind of fading in and out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird.
So the word of the Lord came expressly to Ezekiel the what? The priest. So that tells us what tribe is he of?
Levi.
He's of the tribe of Levi, and what specific head in Levi's house? Not, well, first of all, it was Kohath, but who specifically was he the son of if he was a priest?
Aaron.
Had to be a son of Aaron. So he was qualified to be what?
High priest.
He could be the high priest, right? Because what did you have to be the high priest?
Direct lineage.
It had to be a direct lineage And out of all the people in Jerusalem, here's one guy who's faithful. And so he is a priest, And the word of the Lord came expressly. What does expressly mean? Excuse me? Okay, yes, to him alone. This came expressly or to him alone. Nobody else was there. Nobody else was watching. You remember when Paul was called, were there other people there?
Yeah.
Did they hear what was said?
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yes and no.
Yeah, exactly. That was a trick question, right?
Yeah.
Because they heard the noise, but what couldn't they do? They
couldn't understand
it. They heard the voice, but they couldn't understand what was said. In this case, nobody was there except for Ezekiel. And he says, first of all, I looked, and behold, a whirlwind was coming out of the north, a great cloud with raging fire engulfing itself, and the brightness was all around it and radiating out of its midst like the color of amber out of the midst of the fire. So what I did this afternoon is I got on the internet and I found some pictures of what it might have looked like. Now, these are real pictures of a volcanic eruption, and this is what they look like. So this something like this is what Ezekiel saw. And, of course, we don't know which one it would be, but these are the kinds of things that he could have seen because that's what it's talking about. So you picture a whirlwind with something like that. Would that be pretty awesome? And or something like that, or something like that. So he sees this whirlwind coming toward him with this fire engulfing itself. And is he the first guy to see a whirlwind?
Probably.
Who else saw a whirlwind?
Elijah and Elisha.
All right, Elisha saw. One other person did.
Job.
Okay, the Lord spoke to Job out of a whirlwind. Now, would that be pretty impressive when God says, who is this who darkens counsel with words without knowledge? And would you annul my judgment that you might be justified? And what's in the background? Big tornado. Now, if you see a tornado, is that enough?
Yes.
Yeah, that's more than enough. But then God's booming out of the tornado. And the same thing here. He sees something like that or something like that coming at him. Would that be enough? Yeah, I'd be terrified. So he sees this great cloud, again, verse 4, sees a great cloud engulfing itself. And you can see now we come back to page 2, the very bottom, Ezekiel's visions. The first thing he sees is a whirlwind and a cloud. And we just covered all that, so let's go ahead and turn the page. And now we're on page 3. So now he sees four living creatures. All right, from within came the likeness of four living creatures. Now, is this the first time they're mentioned? Or is this the only time they're mentioned? No, they're also something similar. They're called four living creatures, but they're not quite the same. Because this creature has four different heads. And in Revelation, each one has a head. They're the same heads, but they're each on a creature. And the firmament in Revelation is a different color than the firmament that is found here, which is sapphire. Okay, so I have these four living creatures. They had the likeness of a man. That means they stood up like a man. Now, most living creatures are on all fours, right? But these creatures are standing up like a man. But they're really not like a man because they all have four faces and they all have four wings. And their legs were straight. The soles of their feet were like soles of calves' feet. They sparkled like the color of burnished bronze. Their wings touched one another. They did not turn when they went. Each one went straight forward. So again, I took some time today and managed to find some pictures. Now, these are artist rendition. Now, keep in mind, it's probably not what it looked like at all, but I just wanted to give you a way to kind of envision what he saw. He sees an eagle, he sees an ox, he sees a man, and he sees a lion. And this would be another rendition of it. The wings are covering the body. The other wings are out. You see, again, the four faces. And he saw something like that. Now, whether that's exactly what he saw, no one can tell. But again, this is someone who's read the book and put this together for us. And so that's what he saw. He saw some kind of a being. Now, of course, the one difference is they weren't colored like that. What were they colored like? like bronze. So if you've ever seen a movie where somebody has been painted a certain color or they have been put certain color on them, that's kind of how you would envision this. So it's just like burnished brass. All right, then we have wheels in wheels full of eyes. So we look at verse chapter 1, 15 through 18. A wheel was on the earth beside each living creature. Now notice it's not under. We'll see a few renditions where they put the wheels under the living creatures. Are they under the living creatures? No, it says they're by. They're by the living creatures. And it says that they were the color of beryl, and they all had the same likeness, and the appearance of their workings was, as it were, a wheel in the middle of a wheel. Now, these people all make it like a wagon wheel, two wheels. Could it have been a sphere where it could roll any way it wanted to? So that's another possible rendition. Now, there's a wheel in the middle of a wheel. When they moved, they went toward any one of four directions. They did not turn when they went. So it wasn't like a car where you have to steer it. These things had the ability to go north, south, east, west, all at the same time without turning. So each one had the ability to do that. Then it says later, it says the wheels went beside them. The living creatures were lifted up from the earth. The wheels were lifted up. Then it goes on to say, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. Verse 21, when those went, these went. When those stood, these stood. When those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up from the earth together with them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. So now we have these wheels, and I thought that was pretty good, except he's got one too many wheels. So that's a problem with that rendition, but and the eyes are kind of lacking. I thought that one might be a little better, but again, we don't know if there were spokes in there or not. But he's got the wheels, and you see the eyes are on this side, the eyes are on this side, and the eyes are on the other side, and the eyes are on the outside. So all four sides, well, he doesn't have any in the middle. I guess you'd see each other. I guess you'd only see yourself if you were in the middle. So that's another rendition of the wheels. So we've got this four living creatures with wheels next to them that can go in all four directions. All right, so then we come to, well, actually, let me see if I've, okay, no, we need to talk about the firmament above their heads first. So let's look at that. That's at the bottom of page 3. Okay, so then, okay, and I wanted to explain to you what firmament means. So you remember in Genesis chapter 1? God made the firmament. What did the firmament do with the waters? Okay, it separated the waters above from the waters below, which ultimately became what? The separation between water on the earth and the clouds that are in the heaven carrying the water. So the firmament was a separation. Now, at night, we have a different firmament, and that's the firmament that separates the stars and the moon, and actually the sun as well, although you can't quite see it. But that's another firmament. Now, which firmament is bigger?
Second.
Well, the second firmament is way bigger. I mean, we don't even know how big the universe is, but the universe is classified as a firmament. And what's above that? In him we live and move and have our being. So what's above that firmament?
God.
God's above that firmament. So there's a separation of the waters from the waters. There's a separation from the earth and the stars. And there's a separation of the heavenly realm from the physical realm. So that's what the word firmament actually means. All right, so let's go now to page 4. Okay, so the likeness of the firmament above the heads of the living creatures was like the color of an awesome crystal stretched out over their heads, and under the firmament their wings spread straight out, one touching the other. And the noise of their wings like the noise of many waters, a tumult like the noise of an army. When they stood still, they let down their wings. A voice came from above the firmament that was over their head. Then above the firmament over their heads was the likeness of a throne and appearance. What was it like? Like a sapphire stone. So let's kind of again look at the envisionment here. So you see the wheels. You see the angels, or excuse me, the creatures with their wings touching each other. And then you see the four faces. So that's one rendition. And of course, who's that? That's Ezekiel. That's Ezekiel. And I think that's probably pretty close to what he saw. Here's a nut. Whoops. Oh, great. Okay. All right. So here's another rendition. And again, I think it's a pretty good rendition, except I don't think that's really an awesome crystal. But if you look at the four living creatures, you see how they're set up. You've got one, two, and then three, four. And they can go in any direction they want to. And they all have wheels right next to them. And so this is the firmament. And it's separating what? Separating the noise. It's separating the all the action and activity of these four living creatures from God who is sitting on the throne. Okay, so, and again, that's another, I think, pretty good rendition, except it's probably not in Jerusalem, which is, I think, what they have pictured here. Although I guess that could be the city, a rendition of the city where Ezekiel lives in. Where's the river, though? Anyway, you can see that at this point they're up in the air, which it does say can be lifted up, it can be dropped down, and when they're not moving, the wings are not touching each other, so you can see that. The wheel is there, but I don't know about this circle. I'm not sure if that's really right or not, but there you see above the firmament, and again, does he have the firmament right? Does that look like a crystal,
no.
An awesome crystal? No, but that's the best he can do. Then the throne is the color of a sapphire, and above is this rainbow. So now you see the full picture of what he saw. And so, as I say, this is very comparable to a chariot. Because is it moving? It's moving. And is there a place for God to sit on top of it? Yeah. So you could call it a chariot. You can call it a method by which things can be moved from place to place. And so here's another rendition. And you see the four living creatures, now their wings are touching each other. And what's missing, though?
Firmament.
Well, the firmament's here.
Is that? Oh,
well, no, you're right. There is no firmament. That must be the firmament, that round circle there. That's a real awesome crystal, right? But where are the wheels?
Like they're up
there. They supposed to be up there?
No,
they're supposed to be on the ground right next to them. So, like I said, these guys aren't perfect, but I like this because it helps me to get a better picture of what all these things look like. So this is what he sees. He sees the four living creatures. He sees the wheels. He sees the firmament. And above the firmament, we'll talk about that in a moment. Here's another rendition where the living creatures now are not moving. And you have the four wheels. You have the four living creatures. Does that kind of look like an awesome crystal?
Yeah.
It's better than any of the rest of them. And then on top of it, that doesn't really look like a sapphire, does it? So, again, and here's another rendition with the picture here. We saw that one earlier. I just covered this part up so we would just see the firmament first. And again, does that look like an awesome crystal, sort of? No, it may look like that. And then here's an old rendition. This was probably done by some monk back in the 10th century or something. But you can see the wheels. Are the wheels within the wheels?
Kind of.
Not really. Yeah. The four living creatures, you see here, they have four heads. But how are they depicting the four heads?
One per creature, I think.
See, they're depicting it as one per creature, except it's the one creature with four heads coming out of it, which could be the case. Here's Ezekiel. Here's the firmament, here's the throne, and here's a picture of the appearance of a man that is above the throne. So I think those are all fairly close. Any comments or thoughts so far? Now, don't go away from here thinking that any of these look right, but they help us envision. These are imaginations, but I think they're fairly close. They give us an ability to have an image of this moving chair, if you want to call it a moving chair. And so now we have the color of a sapphire stone, and this is basically the color of a sapphire stone. They have a light, a medium, and a dark, but you can see it's kind of a bluish purple. So that is what it looked like. And now we come to the actual appearance of the individual. So now we see Ezekiel 1, 22 through 25, which is right toward the top, right above the call of Ezekiel, which I don't think we're going to get to. I thought we would as fast as we were going, but I don't think we will. All right. Above the firmament over their heads was the likeness of a throne in appearance like a sapphire stone. On the likeness of the throne was a likeness with the appearance of a man high above it. And from the appearance of his waist and upward, I saw, as it were, the color of amber, and the appearance of fire all around within it. And the appearance of his waist and downward, I saw, as it were, an appearance of fire with brightness all around. So, once again, I took some time today. This is amber. This is what amber looks like. These are some pictures of amber. And then from his waist and downward, these are all pictures of steel, melted steel. So you kind of get a picture here. Well, that's lava. I got some lava ones too. Just to give us an idea of what that might have looked like. And then finally, there's a rainbow on the top. And again, you kind of get a picture here of what he saw. And I took some pictures of rainbows just to give you an idea of what rainbows with brightness would look like. So these are some examples of how a rainbow can appear. And he saw something like these. These are all real pictures of what it can look like. And you can see the various colors that are depicted here, depending on the type of a rainbow that he saw. But you look at this one, are there a lot of different colors there? No, that one, of course, I think that's probably near sunrise or sunset. I think that's why it looks like that. Now here's another one. Which again, you see the color on the inside of the rainbow, and I think that's kind of how we depict it. So again, this is kind of what he saw. And then the last verse in chapter 1 is, actually the last couple of verses, it says, when I saw it, I did what? Under the call of Ezekiel.
Fell
on my face. I think I would have fallen on my face a lot quicker, probably when I saw that. Whirlwind coming. But he witnessed all of this. Then he fell. And then he heard a voice. And the voice said, Son of man, stand on your feet and I will speak to you. So God want him on his face? No, he wants him standing up. So he stands up. And then the Lord starts talking to Ezekiel. And so it says, Son of man, stand on your feet and I will speak to you. Then the Spirit entered me when he spoke to me and set me on my feet, and I heard him who spoke to me. So is the Holy Spirit involved in this vision? Yeah, he's picking him up, and he's the one who's helping him to hear the words. All right, so then we drop to the very middle of page 4 where it says, He said to me, Son of man, I am sending you to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that has rebelled against me. And their fathers have transgressed against me to this very day. All right, so we're 15 years in the captivity, and what's God saying? They're still, to this very day, they haven't learned a thing. To this very day, they haven't repented. To this very day, they have not listened to me. So, and then it says they are impudent and stubborn children. And I am sending you to them. Now, I found the terms impudent and rebellious, and I'm not sure we can get to it today, but I'd like to, so we don't have to come back to this next week. But the term impudent means, it's two words. The first word is face, and the second word is hard, or you look at the adjective underneath it, it means hard, harsh, cruel, severe, strong, violent, fierce. So when you look at the face of the children of Israel and God's talking to them, what does it look like? Yeah, exactly. That probably catches it pretty good. Then the next word, this is face and hard face. The next one is made up of heart and hard. So, and the word hard means strong, mighty, heavy, severe. So when God's speaking to the children of Israel, They're angry, they're severe, they're hard-hearted, they're not going to listen. So they're impudent and rebellious. And then, as I said a moment ago, God tells Ezekiel, your success is not based on whether they hear you or not. And this is something, again, that we've talked about so many times. We plant and water, God gives
the increase.
Is it up to us to determine whether or not this happens? Absolutely not. No, our responsibility, as he says here, is to teach. So whether they hear or whether they refuse, for they are a rebellious house, they will know that a prophet has been among them. All right, we're not going to be able to get to the last two, so we'll come back to this next week, and then we'll move into the beginnings of the work that God gives him to do. And this was a fairly quick class. A rapid class, and that's why I said if you like history, I guess I should have said if you like history and you like visions. Carl?
Appreciate the graphics.
Oh, well, thank you. I took a lot of time today looking at those, but I really thought that they were fascinating. And I think it gives us a picture that maybe we didn't have before. All right. That won't go in my book, though, because those are all copyrighted, so I can't put them in the book.